Welcome to the Financial Management Magazine podcast series, a service of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants. This series features discussions with chartered global management accountants and other experts about the topics, trends and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession.
When we hear the phrase succession planning, many of us think it pertains only to a company's next CEO or CFO. Shara Roman believes this thinking is too narrow. In today's episode of the FM podcast, she explains why. Roman is a consultant in the Washington, D.C. area who has worked in a variety of roles and industries. She takes a wide-ranging view of succession in an interview with senior editor Neil Amato. Here's their conversation.
Shara, thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, happy to be here, Neil. Thank you.
We're going to talk about succession planning today, so I think it's first important to define it. How do you define succession planning?
So from my perspective, it's really about ensuring that your workforce is ready and prepared with the skills and experience to run your business in the future. So it's less about replacement planning, which is the more traditional view of succession planning, and more about really future-proofing your workforce. So it's not a one-for-one, you know, CEO or VP of finance is about to retire and we need to backfill that job and let me identify one or two successors. It's really about thinking about where is my business headed? What are we going to need in the future? What are those soft skills, hard skills? What are the types of leaders that are going to be successful running this organization in the future? And when I say leaders, not just people managers, right? Individual contributors as well.
Right. So succession planning goes beyond who's going to be the next CEO.
Yes, for sure. Because our traditional approach has always been about the C-suite. But we need to really look beyond the C-suite and look at all levels of the organization. So we have an aging population at, you know, with baby boomers that are exiting the workforce in droves. And we've really not done a great job of preparing the next level of leaders. Gen X, who follows the baby boomers, is a smaller generation. Many of them actually left corporate America and started their own businesses. So you sort of theoretically have fewer Gen Xers in traditional corporate roles. You now have, you know, 70 million millennials that are in the workforce. But many of the leadership roles are being held by these baby boomers that if they're not helping with that knowledge transfer and not helping with really cultivating that next level of leadership and helping people think about what is that future state going to look like, it becomes sort of a real, you know, becomes a real issue. So you want to think about just beyond the C-suite, which might have 6, 8, 10 people, and really think at multiple levels throughout the organization.
So a reminder, we're recording this podcast at the American Institute of CPAs CFO conference in Chicago, where Shara is presenting. One of the things that you'll address is the trends that have perhaps magnified the importance of succession planning. What are some of those?
Yes. So I call it sort of this perfect storm, which is sort of the trifecta of artificial intelligence, the gig economy, and this new generation, the Gen Zs, that have very different needs and are putting pressures on us from an organizational perspective. There was a study done by Digital News Asia that said that 85% of our jobs are going to be transformed in the next 3 years. It's a pretty stunning statistic. 25% of that will be due to digital transformation. The other 25% will be sort of redundant, and then others will be sort of, you know, evolve kind of along the way, right? So from an AI perspective, that's really changing how we need to think about the future of our workforce. When we think about sort of the gig economy, people are more free to dictate work on their own terms. 40% of the workforce is in the gig economy. and I know that this is a bit of a squishy number because it also, it not only includes people that are full-time giggers or part-time giggers, but it includes people who have regular full-time jobs and also have a side hustle, right? So those numbers are a bit squishy. But at the end of the day, all the data points to it's 40%, it's growing, and we now have this not only 70 million millennials, but we've got 70, 80 million Gen Zers, which are the 22-year-olds and younger that are going to be coming into the workforce. And they think differently about work, right? They are not as beholden to the way things used to be as some prior generations might have been. And so they're not going to stick around in a company if they don't see personal growth, if they don't see a path for themselves. They're more centered, and I don't mean this in a bad way, they're more centered on their lives and their professional and personal growth, not about protecting their boss's careers. So we have to sort of really think about, you know, all of those elements and how that impacts us as organizations as we think about, you know, succession planning. And I know we're calling this succession planning, but it really is about workforce planning and future skilling your workforce and ensuring that you are really anticipating where you're going to, where you're going to be headed. The other big thing that we also sort of need to, you know, think about are all of the crises that we have faced in the last 2 or 3 years. And I don't know if, if they're sort of intentionally increasing or we're just paying more attention in media. But if you think about the fallout in business and the exodus of leadership resulting from the Me Too crisis, from ethical issues, from data breaches, right? We can go on and on sort of the heads that have rolled or people that have had to step down in all of these unplanned circumstances.
You mentioned the Me Too movement. We'll come back to that topic in just a little bit. One thing I want to ask first is, why are people not spending enough time on succession planning? Because it sounds like they're not.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I spent, you know, 20-something years in HR leadership roles. And I think in general, in organizations, we sort of feel like we don't have enough time. There are other things that take more precedence in an organization. And quite candidly, I think we sort of seem to devalue the importance of planning for your people relative to how we plan for our business or our financials. So, you know, if you think about financials, you're looking at them weekly, biweekly, certainly monthly, right? You're looking at your P&L statements, you're looking at your balance sheet. There is this ongoing conversation. Some companies, one of the companies I worked with, we dedicated days to quarterly operational reviews, right, where we flew in business unit leaders from around the world. And out of the 60-something slides that would be presented on that topic, you know, there was one, maybe two, on the people component. So there is this disconnect where companies sort of say that people are their most valuable asset, and particularly in the knowledge industry, right, where we have all, in the service industry, where we have all knowledge workers, there's really that gap that's pretty prevalent. So we need to think about it and do something about it and do it differently.
Right. I mean, if 58 slides are about business and numbers and other things, and two are about people, that doesn't really show the importance of the people, I guess.
Yeah, and I'd like to sort of just add on to that as well, right? We tend to think of succession planning and even just sort of talent or workforce-related activities as a standalone event rather than it being a part of how we actually run our business. So all things business get in the way of those things, right? So if we're thinking about it as an activity as opposed to how you run the business, it'll never be important enough. You don't think about looking at your financials as an activity, right? You look at your financials to run your business because it gives you data that informs you on where you need to make changes. You look at forecasts. So people say they don't have time, or they say, well, we looked at it last year and nothing's changed. well, how do you actually know that nothing's changed? They're people. They're living, breathing human beings. So things have to have changed. They're thinking about sales, or they're thinking about other areas of growth, right? They're busy closing out the books. They're launching a new product. So there are all these things that get in the way. And it's a matter of, if this is something that's really important to us in this organization, then we make time for it and we integrate it into our operating cycle.
You mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, some of your previous experience. Now may be a good time to kind of talk about you, your background, and how you got to where you are today.
So that's a great question. I don't know how much time you have. I'll make it really short. I'm kidding. So
our listeners have all the time in the world.
Right. They should be succession planning and workforce planning. So I was born in Bombay, India, and moved to Nigeria in Lagos when I was very young. I was about a year and a half, 2 years old. I spent elementary years there, went to boarding school in England, ended up meeting my husband, who is an American from the Bronx, who was stationed in Nigeria with the Marine Corps. And we ended up moving to Greece, getting married in Greece, and then coming to the U.S. many, many moons ago. I spent most of my corporate career in the human resources field, really in a way being very lucky, working in organizations where there was a lot of transformation. There was a lot of change that was happening, and I was really attracted to those types of organizations. And if I sort of rattle off the names, you know, you'll probably sort of realize why I say some of these things. So I joined Visa in the early 2000s when we were actually spinning off a shared service part of our organization during the whole dot-com boom. So we had this, you know, business unit that we were actually trying to have compete with all the dot-com companies that were out there. I then was at Fannie Mae when we were going through the accounting scandal and had to transform our culture and reemerge from that. I left, however, before the financial crisis. People wondered if I had, you know, some sort of kismet or some kind of crystal ball. But then I went to CGI, which is a global technology and managed services consulting organization. Had a chance to do a lot of merger and integration work there and work globally as well. And then I went to a trade association where I was head of HR. And when I sort of looked at all of what I had done and what really brought me energy and what really excited me about work, it was all surrounding how do I help organizations transform and identify cultures of purpose and create high-performing organizations that all generations feel that they can really thrive and feel included, right? And so I decided to start the Silverine Group a little over three years ago. When I think about my sort of diverse upbringing and the fact that I lived in so many different countries, you know, one of the things I say is that I grew up as a guest in someone else's country. And so that really gives me sort of a lens and a perspective of being really curious of what are people thinking, how are they adapting, you know, how do things sort of come together? How do you make people feel a part of a whole? And as a kid, you know, we didn't get caught up with the differences so much that we had. We always looked for, how do you make friends with someone, right? And particularly for me, as I was moving around, I had to like figure out how to thrive in the new community that I was thrown into. So I think that sort of resilience, in a way, sort of really helps me sort of think about how I can help organizations and sort of bring that lens to what they're doing as it relates to culture and inclusion.
You mentioned the Me Too movement earlier. Let's talk a little bit more about the tie-in between Me Too and succession planning right now.
The Me Too movement brought down over 200 men, according to a report by the New York Times. So this was between sort of, 2016 to 2018 when this report was published, or the article was published in October. These were unplanned exits from companies that we know of and speak of and use and, are very familiar with their brands on a daily basis, right? Companies like Uber, Nike, Google, Vox Media, a couple of EY and KPMG in Australia were also impacted. So, the list can sort of go on. And many of these organizations did not have a plan on how to fill that void. So when Uber's CEO was forced out by the board, it took them several months to identify a successor and bring someone in. There were several other heads that rolled as a result of that. And, if you think about sort of the disruption to the business, the lack of trust that it constitutes both sort of internally and externally, the financial disruption, the consumer disruption, it has a huge impact. And so, there are things that are happening, as I mentioned earlier, as it relates to kind of those sort of larger disruptors that we know are coming, whether they're demographic or technological or whatever. And then there are also these other events that are unforeseen that impact us in our organizations. And so, at the very top of the organization, it's our responsibility to think about succession, to think about workforce planning, just even simply from a risk perspective. So boards are usually all over it from a CEO perspective, right? But it's, in my mind, it's sort of beyond just that very top role.
Are there examples of organizations who are good at succession planning? Anything recently that you can point to? Or what are the things that good organizations or organizations that are good at succession planning do well?
Yeah, so I think ones that do it well are ones that are really sort of doing it in a routine kind of way. It's a part of how they run their business. They think about what their organization is going to look like in the future, and nobody has a crystal ball, so they don't always get it right. But the point is that they're looking at it from that perspective, right? So they're looking at it, they have the lens of being a disruptor. And so they know that they can be a disruptor or they can be disrupted. And so they're always trying to think at the possibilities of what might be coming rather than relying on the fact that their past successes are going to be the path to future success. And they're less hung up with creating future leaders in their current mold. Oftentimes we, it's just human nature, right? We sort of look to people that look like us, act like us, go to our same schools, whatever it is. And that's part of the challenge we have with sort of the lack of diversity and the lack of inclusion. But they look at their future leaders in a very different light. And they recognize that they're going to look differently. And I don't just mean physically look, right? Their skill sets are going to be different than what they are today in terms of getting those people into those roles. So they cast that net very broadly. And they look at talent not as a specific job that someone sits in at a specific point in time, but they've really thought about the skills, the experiences, the traits that they think they're going to need to run the company in the future. And they look at the talent pool. So they might look at a whole team of people. A lot of what I'm talking about is really around thinking much more holistically around your talent. So it's about talent planning. It's about career development. It's around leadership development, right? It's about identifying what your future workforce needs are going to be based on what your strategy is, and making that a reality.
What are two or three ways to get started on being better at succession planning?
I would start by thinking about, you know, how do you really get to a place where you can be transparent about succession planning as well? You know, a lot of times we've done succession planning sort of in secrecy, kind of in smoke-filled rooms. And that is an important part around the culture change and the culture shift that you need to have truly successful and impactful succession and workforce planning in organizations. So really think about, what is that transparency going to look like? How are you going to engage your staff? What are you going to ask them to do? What are they going to be accountable for? How are you going to put, how are you going to hold leaders accountable for creating the time and the space to do this? You know, secondly, it really needs to be connected to your business strategy. So whatever it is you are planning for the future, that needs to include that people component. And whatever operating cycle you have where you're looking at your business and you're looking at your financials and you're looking at, you know, your production data, whatever it is, you need to integrate your people component as a part of that. I would, you know, also add, and I think we talked a little bit about this earlier as well, is don't limit yourself to specific jobs and think about, oh, I've got to replace the CFO, I've got to replace the head of HR, or, you know, it's this marketing manager that I need to think about. Really think about it in terms of the broader organization, which is harder and easier at the same time, right? Because we tend to be pretty siloed. And so that's sort of the other piece I'd say is to break out of your silos and really think about it from an organizational perspective. One of the other organizations I've worked with, you know, and I don't mean to sort of just keep talking about finance people, but there we actually took a controller and put him into a P&L role because his skills and his contribution to the organization was much better suited in that capacity rather than keeping him in sort of finance and accounting, which is what his degrees and his experience said he belonged. You know, so it was really looking kind of at what were his interests, how was he contributing to the organization. You know, he was thinking strategically, right? He was identifying opportunities for new business. He really understood the clients. And so this gave him that opportunity to go run with it.
So I think some of succession planning really just might be having more conversations with your employees to actually know what they're interested in and maybe where their skills are, despite what that, you know, their education says they should be in job XYZ.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a really, really good point, right? And, you know, when you think about building great organizational cultures and you think about building trust in organizations where trust is really eroding, right, in terms of how employees are viewing the relationship they have with leadership, so much of it is because we don't engage in conversation. We don't engage in an authentic way. Oftentimes, I think as leaders, we feel like we need to have the right answer or we need to have a answer. And so it's better not to engage if we can't get into that. You know, people struggle with, I don't want to make a commitment to someone. You know, what if it's wrong? What if I can't deliver on that promise? Well, if you have that transparency that I mentioned earlier and you have these open conversations to say, look, you know, none of us are going to be here forever. So let's have a conversation on what you want to do and how you can contribute to this organization, where your skills and passions are. You know, what are things that you might want to try and you might want to sort of dabble in? And yeah, you're going to make mistakes. We all make mistakes. Let's learn from it. Let's grow from it. Let's sort of break out of that mold of this sort of very established hierarchy and this sort of expectation that you've got to do your job for X number of years before you can move up to the next level, right? Those days are quite frankly gone.
Shara, this has been an excellent conversation. Is there anything you'd like to close with?
Yeah, I would just close with sort of reiterating a point that I think is really important, and that is that we need to think and plan for our workforce just as often as we do for our financial planning and our financial reviews. So talent and workforce planning is critical to executing on the business strategy, and you really can't disconnect those two.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. You're welcome. Really fun having the conversation with you.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the association, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The association, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to and assume no responsibility for the content or application of the material contained herein and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.